This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. I welcome you to the month of December with the Raiders at 9-2 as they entertain the Buffalo Bills, coming in with a record at 6-5 Sunday at the Coliseum. A lot to get to. We're going to be joined by Hall of Famer Dan Fouts, who's on the call for CBS, and Vic Carucci, one of the best NFL insiders out there. He covers the Bills for the Buffalo News. We'll check in with him in a little bit. Big spot for the Raiders. And a couple of weeks ago, I told you, I thought the most critical point of the season was Monday Night Football in Mexico City into the Sunday game against Cam Newton in Carolina. And both games ended dramatically, and the Raiders won them both. I mean, this team is incredible. Overtime in Tampa, going for two against New Orleans. The list goes on and on. How the Raiders have built momentum to 9-2, and now they sit and control their destiny in the AFC West as Kansas City is playing great football and Denver is still in the hunt, along with the Miami Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens. You know the teams, you know the names, and New England as the number one seed that everybody seems to be looking up to. But for this week's edition of the podcast, we want to talk about this matchup against Buffalo and how important this game is. No such thing as a letdown game under Jack Del Rio. He coaches this team up all the time. They'll be ready for this game. But on the other side, Rex Ryan all week hasn't been chirping as much, hasn't been poking the Raiders at all. I think he understands this is a playoff game, and he's made it clear this week. Every game Buffalo plays starting in Oakland is a playoff game. As soon as they lose, they're eliminated. Mathematically, they're alive, but they won't be able to catch the Dolphins, the Patriots, and obviously the three teams in the AFC West. So this is a do-or-die game for a team that's pretty good. And Rex Ryan is a good defensive coach. I think he's a better defensive coordinator than a head coach. But either way, he's going to have this team ready to go. Coming into this game, the big news, Derek Carr's pinky. I had him on the radio on the flagship, 95.7 The Game on Monday. He's fine. He says he's good to go. He'll be ready to go. What a performance by number four, coming back out from the locker room and leading the Raiders to that victory over Carolina. And he is, I believe, the front runner for the MVP, along with Matt Ryan and Drew Brees. I don't think Tom Brady can win that award missing four games. So Carr's got a lot to play for as the captain of the team and individually as he continues to play at such a high level. And also, Khalil Mack, congratulations to him for being the defensive player of the week for his performance in that game. And that was one for the ages in that last Sunday win. Mack became the first NFL player since Charles Woodson back in 2009 to record a sack, interception, return a touchdown, and a forced fumble and a fumble recovery in the same game. Again, that's Lawrence Taylor back here now as Khalil Mack. He's that good of a player. So there's a lot of emotion surrounding this team, but be careful with Buffalo because Buffalo's got a lot to play for, and they come in as the number one rushing team in all of football. Ranked number one, the Raiders are ranked 10th at 112 yards a game. The Bills number one at 157.4. That's impressive. But the Bills are dead last, 32nd in the league when it comes to pass offense, and the Raiders are fourth. So the Bills don't even throw it for more than 183 yards, as Carr and the Raiders are right there ranked fourth with 278.6. So to me, it's simple. Anybody can figure this out. The strength of the Bills is Shady McCoy running the ball behind that big offensive line and coming off what they did last week in a big game against Jacksonville. They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 28-21 at home. In that game, McCoy had 19 carries for 103 yards and two touchdowns, and it was the return of Sammy Watkins. Three receptions for 80 yards. Tyrod Taylor was 12 of 18 for a 166 and only one touchdown, but they won the game, and they rallied. And McCoy, one of the better running backs in football, was the leader of that team, getting him going. In this game, I think that the Raiders' defense has got to play well, especially on the back end. They're going to have to do a good job at stopping the run, but make sure they're not beat downfield. The Raiders are still ranked 29th overall in total defense, and when it comes to pass defense, 28th. So I think that Rex Ryan and his staff is going to look to attack the Raiders downfield, even though they like to run it. This is going to be a chess match. Jack Del Rio and his staff versus Rex Ryan. But remember, Buffalo's fast. Percy Harvin's back. He could be big in the return game or on a reverse or something big like that. And Marquette King and Sebastian Janikowski have to have big games, especially King pinning Buffalo back and making Tyrod Taylor become a pass predictable quarterback. So a lot to get to here. Sunday's a big day. Hey, how about this? If the Raiders win, they go to 10-2. Book it. Get them into the playoffs, and we're talking about a team then focus for Kansas City, San Diego, Indianapolis, and Denver. But the task at hand is the Buffalo Bills. It's a pleasure to be joined by the Hall of Famer Dan Fouts, who's on the call with Ian Eagle this Sunday for the Raiders and the Bills. And Dan, good to talk to you again. And did you think we'd be talking about the 9-2 Raiders as we're in the month of December?
I would be, I'd probably be lying if I said, oh, absolutely, I predicted it. But now this is the surprise team in the NFL, I think, along with the Dallas Cowboys.
How impressed are you with Derek Carr coming off the pinky injury, getting back on the field, and just his overall leadership quality since he came into the league and lost his first 10 games? He's really turned it around as a leader.
Well, he's just built, you know, his confidence is just growing each week. And the way he's doing it, you know, the come from behind wins, the wins on the road. And now that, you know, really one of the final ingredients into a, you know, a top flight quarterback is toughness. And he showed his toughness, obviously, in the win last week. So I'm anxious to see the Raiders against a pretty good Buffalo team, too.
Yeah, I look at the Raiders as we stay with Carr and what he's doing now. This is an offensive line, Dan, that ran the ball really well against Denver and showed how dominant they could be. But in their last couple of games at Houston and obviously this game against Carolina, they weren't able to dominate the line of scrimmage again. When you look at that O-line, are they better at pass protection than run blocking, in your opinion?
Oh, there's no question. And, you know, I think they realize the value of that pass blocking when you've got receivers as the Raiders have on the outside. So against Buffalo, they're going to have to rely on that pass blocking because this is a stout defensive front that they'll be facing.
Dan Fouts is our guest. Dan, one of the other strengths of the Raiders with Crabtree and Amari Cooper and even Seth Roberts, who's emerged, I've been interested in seeing what those running backs do out of the backfield with Jalen Richard, who you'll see here, Latavius Murray, more of a red zone power back, but they got players out of the backfield in Olawale, who's made big plays in the passing game, so that gives Carr about six weapons, including a tight end to throw to. There's a lot of options there for the Raiders.
Well, that's really a quarterback's dream, is to go back to pass and have any one of those five receivers he has available be reliable and accountable. So that's, to me, really a key to a good passing attack. And I know that coordinator Bill Musgrave is doing a great job of spreading the ball around and taking advantage of the talent that he has.
Dan, talk about Musgrave more, if you can elaborate on that, because, you know, fans get critical of offensive coordinators when they have all these explosive weapons and then in the middle of the game they want to establish the run and show some balance. How difficult is that for a team that can do something better? I think the Raiders are a better passing team than a running team, and how Bill Musgrave is able to handle that and keep them balanced.
Well, Bill was a great quarterback at the University of Oregon, and so he knows all about the importance of balance. And, you know, when you do run the ball, so many good things happen. Obviously, you don't get the big plays as often as you do in the passing game, but what you get is the chance to get those big plays off of play action. So, you know, running the ball is always going to be the most important thing, regardless of how well you throw it.
Hall of Famer Dan Fouts joins us. From the first time you called a game with Khalil Mack on the field to now, as he's progressed as the defensive player of the week, coming off that dominant performance against Carolina.
Yeah, he's right up there with Von Miller right now as far as a playmaking rush end, rush linebacker. The ability to think about stripping the ball when you get to the quarterback instead of just making a big hit or securing the tackle. That's a real talent, and we've seen it over the years with, you know, the great Lawrence Taylor. I think he may have been the first one to spotlight that. But everybody now, I mean, look at the Super Bowl last year, what Von Miller did, and now Mac turns the game around, wins a game for the Raiders. with the same type of play, ironically, against the same quarterback.
Hey, Dan, do you enjoy doing that in your life? Can you compare? You're a Hall of Famer when you look at Lawrence Taylor and make those comparisons to a young Mac and Von Miller, because a lot of people say, let's see him at the end of their career. But the eyeball test and looking at the stats, the way Mac and Von Miller play, they deserve to be in a discussion about future great players in this league.
Well, there's no question. And, you know, to be considered a great player in the future, you got to be a great player today. And both those guys are.
Wrapping it up with Dan Fouts. On the Buffalo side, how desperate are the Buffalo Bills? And, Dan, do we make too much out of this when these teams like Carolina last week and Buffalo this week? This is really a playoff game for Buffalo. They're not going to catch New England. They got to find a way to run the table or almost run the table, and Rex Ryan will plug into that emotion with his roster.
Yeah, there's no question. And Buffalo is a run-first team and a defensive team very much in the mold that Rex Ryan needs to have and that he wants. So they run the ball better than anybody in the NFL. Their passing game is a little bit suspect, but getting Sammy Watkins back is huge for Buffalo because he's a difference maker in the passing game. So it'll be an interesting game. But you're right, JT. For Buffalo at 6-5, and with Miami coming on as at 7-4, in that AFC East, we already know that you probably concede the division to New England. Must win, obviously, for Buffalo.
Have you seen enough of Tyrod Taylor to say he's the answer long-term in Buffalo, or is he still proving that he's a franchise quarterback every day?
Well, I think he's got to prove it. There's still things that he does that drive you crazy. I mean, he doesn't read the defense like a quarterback should as far as going from his 1-2-3 type of progression. He's a tremendous runner, though, leading the NFL quarterbacks in rushing. But, you know, he's got to do more in the passing game. Just threw the ball 18 times last week against Jacksonville, completed 12 of them. But still, 18 passes, you know, that's what some teams throw in one quarter nowadays.
Dan, can you leave us with an Al Davis story from the Hall of Fame and the coat and what it meant to be in Canton, Ohio with Mr. Davis, but some of the wars, maybe a story from the sideline while you were warming up, some of the comments as a player that you had with Al Davis over the years?
Well, some of them can't be repeated, JT.
That's what I'm trying to do here.
Well, he'd always stand there in his white suit and stare at us as we're doing our pregame warm-ups. And it never failed that I would always direct one right over his head just to let him know that we're going to be there all day.
And then when you got to Canton, Ohio, and Mr. Davis in Canton, Ohio, did there something happen there where you became closer? Were you friends at some point?
You know, we never really crossed paths at the Hall because he never really came back all that often, which is a shame because he had so much to offer the game of football and the history that he made and the great things he did for the Raiders in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles. I have spent more time at the Hall of Fame with John Madden and really have got to enjoy those times with him.
Dan, last one, Jack Del Rio. Mark Davis is the owner. Everything that surrounds the Raiders on relocation, potentially in Vegas and all of this. Can you just leave us with your opinion of the organization now with Jack Del Rio as the head coach?
Well, I think it was a brilliant choice. You know, you've got a defensive-minded coach who's not afraid to take chances. A lot of defensive-minded coaches really don't ever want to throw the ball. They don't want to do anything to cause their team to lose. But what you're seeing in Del Rio is a real fearlessness as far as his decision-making. And plus, he's got some talent now, and I think you got to give Reggie McKenzie a lot of credit for that.
Dan, I always appreciate your time. Thank you so much. So Vic Carucci's kind enough to join us from the Buffalo News. And Vic, this is a really big game. First off, I want to begin with Rex Ryan. How has he been this week in regards to his temperament, looking towards Oakland, a 9-2 team, when it looks like it's clearly a must-win game for Buffalo?
Yeah, for sure it's a must-win game, to say the least. Every one that they play in these last five, there is no margin for error if they have any hope of breaking a 16-year run of being out of the playoffs. And this is, of course, year two of Rex Ryan, and still a lot of questions about whether the Bills are a team that is ready to take that next step or are consistent with what most Rex Ryan teams have been since he's been in coaching, counting those 6 years with the Jets, which is a middle-of-the-road 8-8 football team, just like they were last year.
Well, this team isn't middle of the road when it comes to being number one in rushing. Why is that working? Is it because not only is Shady McCoy healthy, but this offensive line, how good are they? How much credit do they deserve?
Well, I think they deserve a lot of credit. Anytime you're dealing with a strong running game like Dallas's, for instance, you start with the line, and this line's played well. Now, I'm not suggesting it's anywhere near as good as the Cowboys. I don't think it's as good as the Dolphins' line when healthy has been for Jay Ajayi, but I do think that it's been a factor. Richie Incognito, kind of a rebirth here in his second season with the Bills. They were very strong at center with Eric Wood before he suffered a season-ending broken leg at the against Seattle a few weeks back. But getting good, solid play throughout. But then beyond that, it's just immense talent from LeSean McCoy. Just exceptional things that he can do, elusive, explosive. And he's playing really well at the late stages of a running back's career. Still has a lot of life in his legs. Although, again, still dealing, you know, has dealt with an injury or two this year, but overall a little bit healthier than he was last year, and he was a Pro Bowler last year.
Vic, how do they go from number one in rushing offense at over 157 yards a game to dead last, 32 in a pass offense?
Yeah, and here is the common denominator, and that, of course, would be quarterback Tyrod Taylor, because he's a part of this running contribution. Outstanding, best running quarterback in football, period. And he was a huge part of it last year, and when he was number two in the league in quarterback rushing behind Cam Newton, and he's been up there this year with his running. But as a thrower, as a passer, that's where the questions come into play. I think he's been extremely careful with the football. You see a guy who has not thrown a lot of interceptions, and I think a big part of that is because he doesn't take those chances, and I think your better quarterbacks, your bigger number guys, so to speak, do challenge defenses more. He will take the safer route, or he just doesn't trust what he sees or doesn't see it. He's a smaller guy. It's still about finding lanes, even when you're a smaller guy and moving around. But that's been the you know, a factor in his game, and I think at times he'll take a sack more than he'll risk trying to throw an interception.
Vic Carucci is our guest, one of the best NFL insiders, period, with the Buffalo News. He joins us on the official Raiders podcast. And, Vic, I want to get into the Raiders defense. You see 29th overall, 28th against the pass, 26th against the rush. Does Rex and the staff look at this as an opportunity to attack downfield against the Raiders secondary, or just stay with the meat and potatoes, or run in the football, maybe run right at Khalil Mack, who's the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and maybe running at the Raiders' strength will be an asset for them?
Yeah, I think you would be looking at the same thing I am, which would be the obvious sort of approach that the Raiders have given up those bigger plays through the air. So challenge them. If Sammy Watkins can be, I think, even more than he was last week, his first game back after eight, dealing with lingering issues from offseason foot surgery, and the offensive coordinator, Anthony Lynn, saying, you know, this is still a broken foot, but he's dealing with pain tolerance issue there. Caught a 62-yard pass last week, but really only three catches. He has to be a bigger factor. The Bills have had so many injuries in the receiving core that it might limit their ability to take advantage of that. But I see that as the part. Charles Clay, tight end, I see that as the part of this game where the Bills have to make hay. And, of course, Tyrod Taylor has to be able to escape Khalil Mack and the rest of that rush and make those throws. No easy task there. And the other part of this, as you say, run at Mack. Run at a line that I think by Jack Del Rio's design is going to come more upfield, right? Charging more upfield. So a lot of those delays and draws and counter plays tend to be more effective if you have the right people executing them.
What's it like covering Marcell Dareus, who's considered the best defensive tackle in football, had some problems off the field? Where is he in regards to his focus, his playmaking ability? How big of a concern should that be to the Raiders' offensive line?
it should be a huge concern because he's not only a huge guy, but a very strong guy and an extremely talented guy. He can be a game-wrecking type of player, a term that's used a lot with Mac. I think he's got those skills. He, of course, has another issue, and that is, you know, having missed 8 games this year, 4 because of a substance abuse suspension, 3 with a hamstring issue, and 1 with a groin injury. And he's dealing now with an abdominal injury that he suffered apparently last week their last game against Jacksonville, but by all accounts he'll play. But he is such a beast and a force. He had one of his better games as a Bill, 2 sacks, 3 quarterback pressures, just was in the backfield a lot, and he was not on the field for the final 2 stops that the Bills had against Jacksonville. And I think he is but a force that I like the matchup because it's the Raider offensive line, one of the better ones in the league, going up against this top tackle.
Vic Carucci is our guest. Tell us about Lorenzo Alexander and his journey to 10 sacks on the year.
Well, what a great story, first of all. And you know the guy there, of course, quality person. And I think just coming from where he was, 300-pound defensive tackle, player who also was a backup guard, started out special teams way back in the day, with Washington, I guess it was. And now he's this 240-ish-pound guy, strong and sleek and gets to the ball. But I think that the real key to it is, you know, give credit to Jerry Hughes on the other side, because Jerry flushes a lot of those plays to Lorenzo's side. Not to take anything away from Lorenzo, by the way. You've got to make the plays when they come to you. But he's been part of that. He's also just so smart. Gets in the right position, understands a complicated defense. The Rex Ryan, Rob Ryan scheme has a lot of layers to it, a lot of demands on on linebackers especially, and outside linebackers and linemen, and a lot of changes in their responsibilities right during the course of the game, if not during the course of a play or pre-snap. So he's so good at that because he's smart.
Yeah, I had Derek Karvik on my show Monday, and it's the first thing he brought up about the blitz packages and what he expects to see from the Ryans coming at him. You cover the NFL also nationally. Your assessment of Carr, especially coming off the pinky injury, coming back, going out and leading the Raiders back to beat Carolina, a 9-2 quarterback now, and the progress he's made in his young career.
Such a great story, and I got to tell you, you know, I feel this personal attachment because I was with the Cleveland Browns. I had worked, as you know, for them for about 4 years. Their internal media stuff, hosted a radio show there. I think you were on it with me at one point. And did all the web stuff. And anyway, my favorite quarterback in that 2014 draft was Derek Carr. And he really won me over down at the Senior Bowl and spent some time talking with him and getting to know him a little bit. Not that you get to know these guys a lot, but really studied his backstory and dug in and said, I'm telling you, this will be the solution for the perpetually bad Browns and not, you know, needing that quarterback. Here's your guy. Take him. And I trumpeted that as much as I could. Of course, we know the rest of the story. Johnny Manziel ends up being their pick. But when you look at it, he had those qualities that I thought would make him a success just coming out of college, that exceptional maturity and poise and just a big-time presence that he brought with him. Nothing's too big for him. And then go along with the talent he has and taking advantage and then surrounding him. You know, they did it so right there because before they bring in an Amari Cooper and before you get a Michael Crabtree, what do you get? You fix the quarterback thing. And they did that with that choice. And then, you know, if you eventually you can get a tight end in there of a high caliber quality and a consistent workhorse back, you're looking at something that's pretty scary.
Wrapping it up with Vic Carucci, breaking down Buffalo at Oakland on Sunday. You know, you knew Al Davis, now Mark Davis owns the team, the primary owner of the team. I want to talk about the Pegulas. A husband and wife team, and now with the management underneath them, what have they been like as owners? How much pressure is on the staff below them after this drought that they've had with the playoffs? Are they patient owners? Is it wearing thin on them? Where do they stand within the community of all these other owners in regards to the pressure and the will to win right now?
Well, yeah, I think it would be naive to think that any owner is truly patient, but there are some organizations where we've seen more consistency through some tougher times and good times, but it's usually warranted, right? The track record of success usually backs that up. In Buffalo, it's been too much of a revolving door, and I think it would be a mistake to pull the plug this fast into the Ryan regime. But having said that, you know, it's you never know if things really were to go. I think things would really have to go super sideways over these next 5 weeks. And, you know, not necessarily a lost Sunday, because that's a 9-2 team taking on a 6-2 club that's on the fringes of postseason hope, whereas you've got a club there that's really the best team arguably in the AFC, and maybe more so now with Rob Gronkowski going to miss a lot of time for New England. So I think, you know, when you look at it, you say, okay, where would the problem spots be? And I think, you know, they fired their offensive coordinator after two games. Greg Roman, who you know from the Bay Area, had been with San Francisco, seemed to improve with some of the things they were doing offensively, with Anthony Lynn taking over that spot since then. But if the defense, I mean, the numbers are better with the sacks, but they're having problems at the back end. They have had a lot of injuries. But do owners excuse that? I mean, that's really Rex Ryan's out. If they are at or below 500 again and missing the playoffs, I think part of his message to ownership would be, okay, look, our top two draft picks were injured. One of them for the whole year, Reggie Ragland from Alabama, the second pick overall for them. And I think, and then they got Shaq Lawson for like half a season, and he's been pretty solid, the number one pick. But overall, you know, Sammy Watkins, mostly out of the lineup so far. Darius, mostly out of the lineup so far. When does that become something ownership will understand and say, okay, let's give you another year with a full deck?
Vic, finally, you've been a Hall of Fame voter for a while. You still have that status?
I do.
Okay, just a couple of quick ones. If you can sum up to our audience, Tom Flores, obviously Jim Plunkett, and most importantly, Cliff Branch. The arguments for or against, or what's happening, because the Raiders were finally excited for Ken Stabler. What a shame he already passed on. What that meant to the Davis family, obviously, in the Raider Nation. Where do those three individuals stand, in your opinion, and in the room?
Well, you know, obviously, three exceptional players, people and players that meet the criteria of I think, what a Hall of Famer should, you know, be considered. Now, is there going to be a lot of conversation? Yeah, a whole lot of conversation to go with it before you could say, okay, this guy's a Hall of Famer. But I would be more than open to hear in depth what the advocacy for those individuals would be. I mean, I witnessed Cliff Branch through his career, a good portion of his career, and know what a difference-making player he was. Receivers have a very hard time with the Hall of Fame, and there is a built-in prejudice I've sensed through voters through the years, even before I got in that room, that it's just, you know, the numbers, especially as time has gone on. I mean, he played in an era when the rules weren't as favorable to receivers as they are now, and would get beat up, as many receivers do coming off the line. But I mean, if you make a case for Fred Biletnikoff, that's where you look at it, is in the same context. Can you make the same case for Branch? And I think it's makeable. I mean, I think it's makeable. Flores, for sure, as a coach, you know, you look at what he did and what he meant to the consistency of that organization and what they achieved under him. And then you know, Jim Plunkett, and obviously in that same era with Flores winning a Super Bowl. You know, you look at the work he's done, or he did, excuse me, and revitalizing his career. And I think kind of the same conversation, more modern conversation, is Kurt Warner, right? The current conversation with him is, you look at the spots. He did great stuff at St. Louis, did great stuff with Arizona. In between was that one ugly year with the Giants. With Plunkett, you know, you got to rectify what it took for him to ultimately be a cast off. And then make it work as he did with the Raiders. And again, those are deep discussions and not easy ones.
Awesome, Vic. I'm happy we were able to do that. I'll see you Sunday in the press box and on the field. Thanks so much for doing this.
Looking forward to it. Okay.
Thank you, Vic. We appreciate it. Vic Carucci joining us on the official Raiders podcast. Fantastic insider. Guy who knows the league inside and out. Great to catch up with Rich Gannon again. 17-year career. Former MVP. Four-time Pro Bowler with Sirius NFL XM and the great job that he does as an analyst on CBS. Rich, hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us.
JT, it's always great to hear your voice, brother. How you doing?
Great, Rich. Thanks a lot for coming on. And, you know, you've been on Carr from the beginning in a good way. You said right when he came out of the draft in his first year, even with the struggles that he had with his record, you liked his competitive edge and the ability to lead. Assess the play of Carr this season.
Yeah, he's been really solid. I think it's been a process for him like it is for a lot of young quarterbacks. But, JT, I saw some things from him his rookie year that really got my attention. I mean, that was not a great offensive line he played behind. He didn't really have the talent around him, especially at the wide receiver position, at the running back position. And so, you know, I just looked at the way he hung in there, the way he threw the ball, the way he competed, the way he got knocked around and dusted himself off and got back up in there. It showed some real toughness. And remember, that was kind of a knock on him coming out of college, that against better competition that – you know, he didn't sit in the pocket, and you know he flinched, and you saw no signs of that his rookie year. And I just think you've continually have seen a player that has improved. There's been change around him, which I think, you know, you look at the fact that they had a coaching change, a coordinator change, and he's just come out of it unscathed. And I just think you look at him this year, the way he's throwing the ball, he's got command of the offense, and I think more importantly, he's become the unquestioned leader of that team, which I think is significant.
There were times where you were a vocal leader and you just went out there and showed everybody how to do it on the field. What do you like about what he's doing? Because he is showing emotion. When he came out of the tunnel after the pinky finger injury, there was emotion from the crowd. The crowd roared like when you were playing back in the day in your MVP run. It seems like he gets the fact that his teammates are looking at him and he's got to show leadership and sometimes be emotional.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's a process, you know, with a lot of young players. Look, he came in as a second-round pick. He was a starter right away, or just about right away. And I think that, you know, people look at that and they say, they don't understand that it's not going to happen overnight. And I think he's matured. He understands his role and his responsibility. This team is going to go as far as Derek Carr can take him. I mean, make no mistakes about that. I mean, he's that type of player. And, you know, I think when you look at the top young players coming out in our league in the last 5 years, I think he's certainly one of them. So, I just think his toughness to me, you know, I look at the finger injury and he came back like that. I just think this team really believes that this guy is good enough to get him to the promised land.
Former MVP, the silver and black quarterback, Rich Gannon, joins us on 95.7 The Game. Rich, I look at what happens now with this team going forward. How much pressure is on this defense with Jack Del Rio and Ken Norton Jr. to improve that secondary statistically, because other teams, and you call games and call Raider games, are still going to take shots at them downfield?
Yeah, that's the big thing. You know, I give Reggie McKenzie a lot of credit. I was very concerned those first couple of years, a lot like I think we all were. But I think if you look at how he's put the offensive line together, you look at the additions of Cooper and Crabtree, and then, you know, what they've done and how they continue to, you know, add the pieces. I think defensively they tried to do that, and I just think that the unit hasn't played as well as they would have liked, particularly when you look at the fact that you've got some guys like Mack and Irving that can come screaming off the edge. The secondary to me has to play better. I think the corners, the coverage units, they've given up way too many explosive plays. And that's the big thing. I mean, I go back to our run those 4 years in Oakland. We played, scored a lot of points, but we also gave up a lot of points. And I think at some point, you know, especially in the playoffs, when you're facing really good defenses and good coaches and good running games and good quarterback play, if you don't have a defense that you can kind of hang your hat on, it makes it really tough.
Rich Gannon's now an analyst for the NFL on CBS and CBS Sports Network. You can catch him every week throughout the season on NFL Monday QB on CBS Sports Network. Rich, I want you to elaborate on that, because there were games, and I was there for them, that you had to win in a shootout, and you had some pretty good defensive players, but your mindset on those playoff runs and the run to the Super Bowl, knowing that you had to put up a big number, maybe 28, 30 points to win some of those games, very similar to what this team is going through in the mindset of Carr coming into these games.
Yeah, I never forget the conversation that I had with John Gruden, early in my career in Oakland. He would sit me down on a Friday and say, "We don't score 30 points this week, we have no chance." And so, I mean, that is pressure. And I think we got better on the defensive side of the ball during my time in Oakland. When we started adding pieces like, Rod Woodson or Trace Armstrong or John Perella, those type of players, even a Bill Romanowski that, came in and really helped bring a level of professionalism and attention to detail to that side of the ball. That really helped us. And also getting rid of some players that never really bought in. But, yeah, it's tough. I think it's part of it. I would say this. I think when you look at where they're at offensively, I just think they're playing with such confidence right now, and no one's really shut them down, per se. When they haven't played particularly well, they've kind of stopped themselves with mistakes and turnovers. But I just think that they're pretty explosive. They're going to give people a handful there. And if they can just improve a little bit on the back end and make people drive 80 yards and not give up the explosive plays. Explosive plays are demoralizing to a defense.
Would you give them the edge over Kansas City, or they got to prove it by going into Kansas City on Thursday night, beating them after losing in Oakland?
Yeah, I did that game in Oakland, and they've got to prove it, man. Kansas City, say what you want, the quarterback there knows how to get his team to the finish line. Now, he may not throw for 300 yards every week, but he'll run for a first down. He won't turn it over. He plays well within the system. You can call him a game manager, whatever you want, but that's what he does, and he does it well. And they've got a good defense that's really coming on now, getting Justin Houston back. They present a lot of problems, JP, as you know, especially in Arrowhead, where the noise can be a real challenge. But that, to me, is a big game. If they can go into Kansas City and get a win there, I think that sends a message not just to the Chiefs but to the entire AFC West that the Raiders are the top dog.
Rich, last one. Your relationship from when Al Davis was alive, first knowing Mark Davis, now with Mark Davis today, and the organization, Reggie McKenzie and Jack Del Rio, and let the fans know how you feel about them. You come back to Oakland from time to time. What does this organization mean to you today?
It means a great deal, and it always has. And I would just say this. I am so happy, and I think a lot of people around the league are. I'm not talking about maybe other teams, but I think the league office, to see the Raiders finally back really where they need to be. And I'm so proud that this team and has responded to Jack's leadership. I played with Jack Del Rio. I've covered his games for a long time when he was in Jacksonville or Denver. And Jack was a teammate of mine. And I think he's done a terrific job with this football team. He's honest. He's straightforward. And he tells it like it is. And I think that's what this team has needed. And I tip my hat to the job that Mark Davis has done. He has been very patient, probably a lot more patient than his father ever would have been with even Reggie McKenzie or even, some players, a coach, even Jack. I think he's been patient with the process, and it's paying off in a big way.
Thank you, Rich. We always appreciate your time. You're doing a great job on TV and on radio. Thank you so much.
You're the best. Thanks, JT.
There's a lot on the line with this game. At Buffalo, this is their playoff game. That's been the theme here, and Rex Ryan is all business on this, and we'll see what happens. I'll see you Sunday in Oakland for everyone at Silver and Black Productions. Thanks for joining us. Retweet it. Go to Raiders.com, the Raiders Facebook page. Everything that the Raiders do when it comes to multimedia, the best in the business. I'm JT the Brick. We'll see you next week on the official Raiders podcast.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.